Welcome to Locked On Heat. On today's show, Hassan Whiteside took to Instagram to say he wasn't allowed to shoot threes. We'll talk about if he should.
Then we'll discuss Josh Richardson getting left off the NBA's all-defensive team. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for The Step Back, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Romillo, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for Fansided. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRomillo13.
We're opening up the mailbag today. We'll get to some questions about Hassan Whiteside shooting threes and what the Heat should do about that. But first, the NBA's all-defensive team was revealed today, and Josh Richardson's name was left off both the first and second teams. Richardson finished 16th in the voting process, but do you think he got snubbed, David?
That's a really tough question to answer, to be honest with you. I look at the players that were selected to the team above him, and I don't know that there were many glaring omissions there. Like, I don't know if any one of those players didn't necessarily deserve to. I would say probably Dejounte Murray had the weakest case among those players that were selected. At the guard and forward position, you could have argued that Richardson could fill either one of those slots. I mean, Drew Holiday had a great year for New Orleans. Robert Covington, obviously, for Philadelphia. Victor Oladipo for Indiana. That was the first team as far as
Oladipo and Holiday, I thought they had pretty solid resumes. Dejounte Murray, I had actually, if on my pretend ballot, I had him on my first team.
Really?
I did. I may have dropped him on my dropped him down to my second team, but I actually thought Jimmy Butler. I wasn't that impressed with Jimmy Butler, and he did take one of the guard spots. You could have made him a forward. Draymond Green,
right?
I think he had a good defensive season, but it was like below his own standards. I thought it was inconsistent along with the rest of the Warriors defense all season long. And, you know, I think Draymond kind of got in on name recognition, and so did Jimmy Butler. I was surprised that Giannis or KD didn't get in over a guy like Jimmy Butler. But I suppose Butler played enough minutes at shooting guard that he was able to get in as a guard. Chris Paul, another guard who didn't make it, who had a case but missed a lot of games, so I guess not. I thought Josh Richardson should have been there on that second team. I think that Jimmy Butler was good defensively. I think Josh Richardson was better defensively. I look at the eye test, and you look at the stats, and Barry Jackson tweeted this earlier. Richardson was the only player in the league with at least 121 steals and 75 blocks. Now, those are counting stats,
right?
But they're significant, especially when you look at the resume of a guy like Victor Oladipo, who got in because he led the league in steals. You know what I mean?
Sure. No, I mean, and, you know, there were some statistics there showing that he did keep players shooting to well before or below their usual averages. I think he was fourth best, I want to say, in that regard, like as far as guards are concerned. You know, he did a phenomenal job on great individual scores throughout the year. A snub is kind of a harsh term. And again, there are a lot of narratives. There's no one statistic that really shows how effective a player could be. So much of what Josh Richardson is able to do might be, you know, not necessarily individual defense, but more be more a result of, say, team-wide defense or other help defenders trying to limit what those players are you know, capable of doing as far as the scoring is concerned. So, and then, like you said, the steals and blocks don't necessarily count as much. You know, I don't think they have the same kind of value. They're fun statistics, and for the casual fan, I think a lot of, you know, people tend to look at those and say, you know what, those are impressive numbers. But you can't argue that he was just impressive overall as far as being able to lock in on a defender, on a scorer rather, and kind of just make things more difficult and keep things uncomfortable. You look at guys like him, Andre Roberson, Oklahoma City, although he was injured for most of the year. Guys like that, Paul George to a lesser extent maybe, you know, they really were very effective in that regard. And, you know, none of them were voted as far as the All-NBA defensive
team. Roberson would have made it, right, if he had played more games.
Probably.
He didn't play nearly enough games. He would have made it. I think he would have been in the running for Defensive Player of the Year, I think.
Maybe. It hasn't been a perimeter player. I guess Kawhi Leonard. But he is, again, you know, an unusual case. I think so much of it is narrative driven, though. Like you mentioned this via Twitter with Miami Heat's Cooper Moorhead. I mean, a lot of people just don't know about Richardson's impact. They don't know what he's capable of doing on a regular basis. They just don't see the Heat very often. The Heat isn't an electric team. They're not on national television a whole heck of a lot. So there are not a lot of people saying, you know what, that Richardson kid, he's pretty good. And you know, the fact is he's also a lesser name. If you're going to look at two players on this Heat team that could be qualifying for, I think Justice Winslow would probably get a lot more attention as a higher draft pick, a guy who probably has some greater name recognition throughout the league. So,
well, Cooper made this point too, that, you know, player, you look at a guy like Robert Covington, for example, he makes it. And I thought, you know, his numbers weren't as impactful, his defensive metrics, as they were last year when he finished like third in defensive player of the year voting.
Yeah.
But a lot of these guys, I think that narrative that you're talking about, almost it's like a year too late. So right. I feel like Josh Richardson, there is some backlash, mostly on Heat Twitter and stuff like that. But I think people are recognizing that Josh Richardson is a really great defender, and maybe he does get a little bit more recognition for that next year, and then gets in because he's built up that reputation, which does tend to take about one season for that reputation to really kick into this voting process.
Yeah.
So I hope that would help him next year. But I go back to this basic thing. There's two all NBA defensive teams. That means that there's four guards that you could put on. So who, to me, were the four best guards defensively in the league? And I think it's Jrue Holiday, Victor Oladipo, Deontay Murray, and Josh Richardson. And I thought about this a lot, and those were the four. And you and I, we watch a lot of basketball, not just Heat basketball, but we cover the league, we're in the locker rooms, we're at the games, we see a lot of these things. And Josh Richardson was the fourth best defensive guard in the league this season, just via the eye test. I mean, if you gave me a pick of guards to go defend Steph Curry right now, Josh Richardson would be high up on the list behind Oladipo, Holiday, and Deontay Murray probably.
That's fair. And look, you know what? There's a silver lining here. Hopefully this provides some inspiration. You know, for a guy like Richardson, you know, we talked about this, I think, when we mentioned his exit interview, that he's just a guy who's not known around the league very often. And I think he's just not recognized as being the great two-way player that he is. And I think this is the kind of inspiration. He talked about wanting to be more consistent as a scorer. And I think as great as he was defensively, there's another level for him to reach. And hopefully this is the kind of spark that guides him into that. And you know, if you're looking for a silver lining, that's it. Now, you know, again, I guess you could say he was a snub then. And if that's the case, then hopefully this is the kind of motivation he needs to drive him to another level next year.
I will say he's a snub. I will go that far. Well, let's talk about Hassan Whiteside, who has not been a snub in any sense of the words, and his latest dig on the Heat's coaching staff next, after this quick break. Back with Locked On Heat, let's go to this question from Billy as we open up the mailbag. Billy writes in, now the key question I have is his wording in regards to Hassan Whiteside. Remember, he hit his first two threes of the season before that knee injury. Should we encourage floor spacing from Whiteside? Your thoughts. And so Billy is referring to Hassan Whiteside's latest Instagram video where he makes one three-pointer
and with then his back says, to the hoop.
And then says to right and then says to the camera, there's a difference between you can't shoot and you're not allowed, inferring that or implying that the Heat don't allow him to shoot threes. And going back to Billy's question here, He has an issue with that wording because Whiteside made his first two threes of the season. Now I didn't go back and look at that before we started this podcast. I don't know if that's correct, but I'll trust Billy here and trust that he did his homework. But that's an interesting thing because in our exit interview for Hassan Whiteside, I mentioned that I would like to see Whiteside shoot one 3-pointer a game just for kind of the hell of it, but also you see that that's an important aspect to centers in this game, and that might be a way to increase Whiteside's versatility if he's in fact on the team next season. But if Spoelstra just doesn't want him shooting threes because he doesn't want guys like Whiteside doing that, then that's another question entirely. So let's answer Billy's question here. Should the Heat encourage floor spacing from Whiteside?
Yes, but only to a certain degree. And I think that's the whole thing that Hassan doesn't recognize, is that the floor spacing is one thing if it's only a component of his offense and if it's just one of many things that he can do. The problem is that if you just limit himself, if he limits himself to just being this shooter from the perimeter, then all of a sudden that allows defense to just allow him to sag off him, allow him that shot. It's not like he's going to hit it at such a high rate. The problem was, like, let's say comparing him to another three-point shooting center of equal size, let's say either Jonas Valanciunas or Joel Embiid, these are guys that can drive to the rim, that can pull up for the mid-range shot, that have more than one move capable of, you know, in the low post, and can also dish it off to a cutting teammate if there need be. Now, we've seen Whiteside capable of making that pass, but it's just something that he doesn't do frequently enough to add that kind of diversity to his offense. And so if he's just going to be out there shooting multiple threes, then that's a problem. And so it's, again, not, you know, for its own sake, it's not something that you'd want to encourage. If it's something more, if it's part of a more diverse offensive repertoire, then absolutely.
And if it comes into the, in the flow, within the flow of the offense, I even look at a guy like Aaron Baines, who has attempted quite a few three-pointers sure. just in the flow of Boston's, you know, flow offense. I don't trust Whiteside to do that. I kind of see Whiteside just getting the ball at the three-point line and just sort of doing that thing where he stares at the rim for 4 seconds and then shoots it.
Right.
And you're right. The thing that he can't do that a guy like Embiid and Valanciunas can is put the ball on the ground and attack the basket. And then, you know, Embiid is very effective at it. Valanciunas is fine, but I think people would be surprised to know that, like, Valanciunas is much more athletic and quicker than Hassan Whiteside is at Absolutely. This point in their careers. Whiteside is just a slow dude, and yeah. I don't want him dribbling the ball ever, necessarily, unless
That's
he's
a turnover waiting to happen.
Yeah, and even in the post, I don't like it. I kind of just don't like Whiteside touching the ball a whole lot, which is why I said I would prefer that he maybe take a few jumpers from three-point range, because that means less post-ups. That means less him just dribbling the ball, and I would like to see the Heat maybe get him those shots within the flow of the offense. I just don't know that Whiteside could do it, and a big part of getting those threes is setting really good screens and pick-and-pop actions and stuff like that, which he does not do.
Right.
So Whiteside, great. It, like, awesome that you can go on Instagram and, like, keep redoing the video until you actually make the three, because that's how the world works on social media. I there's a difference between
you
making
don't think
it
he
in
hit
an
it
open
in the first
gym.
Shot, Wes. I'm a little surprised.
There's a difference between doing it in an open gym on Instagram and then doing it in a game. And again, I'm still pro Whiteside taking literally 1 3-pointer per game just so that it's an element in there. But I understand also, like, Spo maybe not wanting to open up those floodgates. You don't, to your point, if you give him 1 3-pointer, is that a slippery slope to him taking 3 or 4 threes a game? Which, like, great if he can make them. I don't think he can do that at a high enough clip.
No, yeah, absolutely. I you could see him totally taking his time running up the floor after a missed shot or even a made shot, taking his time. And then all of a sudden, kind of drifting around the perimeter, waiting for somebody to swing the ball to him. You know, he's not that kind of player. That's not what's necessary. It's you know, we've seen Valanciunas and Embiid as a trailer. That works because, again, he can shoot at a much higher level, or he can drive past a defender, you know, if somebody's late and switching on to him. Whiteside's not that kind of guy. He's going to trail. He's going to be slow in the process. He's going to wait, catch the ball, and as soon as he has it in his hands, he's going to, you know, chuck that shot up. And he's not going to knock it down at a consistent enough level. Not for my taste, anyway. Let's say he can hit a couple of them. I still don't know that a defender would stay on him. And even if they do, if they locked him down defensively, what happens then? He's going to try and dribble past him. He's going to cough up the ball. Somebody's going to poke a hand in there and disrupt it and lead to a turnover and possibly a fast break. It's just not the kind of thing that works particularly well. You know, again, if he starts off in the low post, comes up, sets a screen, and then all of a sudden you've got somebody driving past him because he sets a more effective screen, and then you get, like, Goran Dragic or Josh Richardson diving towards the rim, and then they kick it back out towards the perimeter, Whiteside's wide open, that's fine. You know, if one of those ball handlers draws a double team and you leave Whiteside open the same way we used to see with Chris Bosh on a number of occasions, that's a whole different matter. But, you know, he doesn't set screens well enough. He doesn't allow a ball handler to get any kind of spacing. There's never, our ball handlers aren't necessarily potent enough scores to draw double teams casually like that. So I just, this doesn't work. And he just needs to recognize that. That's great that you can hit that shot. I can hit that shot. I'm not going to get paid $25 million next year.
That's true.
I wish I was. Believe me.
And it also takes Whiteside away from probably his most valuable skill, which is the offensive rebounding.
Yeah.
I would like to see Whiteside just attempt a three-pointer a game. But I saw that video from Whiteside. I started wondering why Spo doesn't want to. And just for all the reasons you and I just laid out, it makes sense. I just don't know if you trust Whiteside to do that, because three-point shooting is such we talk about how much three-point shooting is in the league right now and how important of a skill that is in today's game. But it comes within the flow of an offense. It's kind of like it's a byproduct of ball movement and team basketball, and those are just not things Whiteside specializes in.
You look at I know we want to kind of move on here, but you look at a team like Golden State that is, you could argue, pretty poorly constructed. They've got some great superstar talent, but they also have six centers on their roster that they don't actually play. And they start Draymond Green at center or Kevon Looney, or maybe even Kevin Durant plays a few minutes at center. So it's just, it shows the kind of diversity. I think at this point, you could argue that even with three centers, Kelly Olynyk, Bam Adebayo, and Whiteside on the roster, your better center option might be a guy like James Johnson.
Right. I agree. I mean, you've got a guy like Kelly Olynyk, Bam Adebayo, James Johnson, Justice Winslow, who could play the five and sort of fit what the mold is of a modern NBA team a little bit better than Whiteside does. Yeah. But we'll talk more about what the Heat should do about Hassan Whiteside. There's some scuttle that reports that the Heat are not happy with this latest Instagram video from Hassan Whiteside. We'll talk about what they should do when we come back after this break. Back with Locked On Heat, let's go to our final mailbag question, David. This one comes from Julie B. Rich on Twitter, who writes in, after this next episode in, quote, the Whiteside drama, end quote, I see it as just a matter of time and the right price that Hassan is going to be traded. Do you think it'll be on draft day, someday in free agency, or is there any chance that he stays on this roster? Not that you and me would want that. Interesting question. I mean, look, this report from Barry Jackson, published just a few hours after Whiteside posted that video on Instagram, basically says that the Heat aren't happy with that video, and that internally they're frustrated, and that they continue to seek trade packages for Whiteside. To go to Julie's question here, is it going to be a draft day trade, or some other point over the summer, and what are the chances that Whiteside's on this roster? I know that you're a little bit, you're pretty skeptical that the Heat can even make a move to send Whiteside away. But is there just like a point here where the Heat are just like, whatever, it like just give us anything, and we just want to get rid of this guy because we're sick of Instagram videos and him taking digs at our coaching staff?
I don't think that's the case. I still think the team believes enough in his ability and his size and his limited but solid skills on occasion that they'd rather try and salvage what's left of this relationship and keep him on the roster. Having said that, to Julie's question, I think there are cases that could be made for each of those instances. Trading somebody on draft day, if you can get a pick, we've talked about this most recently, that the Heat are doing their due diligence at the combine, looking at potential draft picks, maybe acquiring one either by purchase or via trade. So there's absolutely an opportunity there for Miami to move Whiteside, possibly in exchange for a draft pick. In free agency, you could use him as a significant piece in a sign and trade. I don't see that. I think that is the least likely option. Unless you're, part of a much larger package, maybe another team is able to swing a sign and trade deal, and you just have to move Whiteside in order to make salaries work. And I think the largest possibility is that he'll stay on the roster. So if I had to give it a percentage, I would say there's a 50% chance he stays on the roster at the very least, and then a 40% chance that you do it via draft day trade, and then another 10% in free agency.
The crazy thing about Instagram is that other people can see it. And the crazy thing about Twitter is that other people can see it. And the crazy thing about like post-game interviews is that it's not just the beat writers who see that stuff anymore. Whiteside's skill set is prehistoric at this point in the NBA.
Yeah.
But I also just don't see another team really jumping, like jumping at the idea of bringing in his personality. Like, if you're...
Okay,
if you're a rebuilding team, do you want Whiteside? No, and you yeah. and you certainly don't want his care. You don't want that in the locker room if you're trying to build a culture, which is why ultimately, like, I don't see him going to Phoenix. I don't see him going to a lot of these rebuilding teams who could use an upgrade at that position, but don't want Whiteside.
Yeah, I mean, you look at something we talked about in our most recent episode of Locked On NBA, which you should all be listening to and subscribe to, I might add.
Good plug.
We talked about, yeah, absolutely. We talked about Clint Capella and his decreased role in the Western Conference Finals. I mean, I don't think anybody in their right mind would argue that Whiteside had a better season than Capella did. And yet we're seeing Capella struggle more and more, his minutes waning as each game goes on. Even in the Game 4 victory on Tuesday night, he only played 20-something minutes, had a very minimal role. And he's a much more versatile player than Whiteside is at this point. And,
right.
And he's much more effective defensively. Yeah.
Like, you can't see Whiteside participating in these conference finals. Like, he's just, like, imagine him on the Celtics. Like, he wouldn't play. Imagine him on the Cavaliers. He might play, but, like, he wouldn't be, like, the Celtics would abuse him. Like, I would rather have a guy like Tristan Thompson, honestly, than Whiteside at this point, because he is a little bit more versatile. He's a better screen setter and can get out in the pick and roll a little bit better defensively.
Active rebounder.
Active rebounder. Whiteside not active. Look, it's going to... Any trade machining that you guys do, you guys being the listeners, don't trade Whiteside for anything of value, because it's not going to happen. If the Heat are able to manage to trade Whiteside, they're not getting anything of value back. They might not even get a rotation piece. And I'm like, we talk about like all the bad salaries that were signed in that summer of 2016. It might be one of those guys that they get back. I mean, it would be a home run at this point if they were able to trade him to the Wizards for Jason Smith and Marcin Gortat. That would be a home run trade at this point, because those are expiring contracts. I think a more likely trade is be like if Riley called up the Wizards and was just like, we'll take Ion Mahimi off your hands, because at least Whiteside could play a little bit and Mahimi can't play anything. Like, that would be the trade, and Mahimi is under contract for another 2 years after this summer. So it's not like he's going to help Miami's cap concerns that much. Miami would have a little bit of money in the move, but like even trading him to Dallas for Wesley Matthews would be a home run. That would be a home run. But I just don't see it happening for a team like Dallas, who is rebuilding and wants to build a culture there. Like, the only team I could see it happening for is a really desperate team, maybe like Washington. And that's, I go up and down the league in their situations, and that's, I keep going back to Washington as the only possibility. And the deal is going to suck for Miami. But
how about reuniting him with David Fizdale with the Knicks and getting Enes Kanter in exchange or something like that?
David Fizdale would just be like, that's a funny joke, Pat, and then hang up the phone. Like,
the good thing he's not the GM for that team. Maybe he's open to it. Scott Perry over in New York, if you're listening to our show, please make that call. We'll take Enes Kanter off your hands in a heartbeat.
I think that the Heat will pursue it. But I think that they've been trying to trade him for 2 years now. Just my gut feeling, and then based on things that we've heard. And if they haven't been able to trade him yet, I don't know. At the end of the day, it might take attaching like a player of actual value to Whiteside to move him, and I don't see that as worth it. So to go back to what you said, probably a greater than 50% chance that Whiteside's on the team next year shooting threes.
Yeah, or not shooting threes and complaining about it on Instagram.
All right, well, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. Send us your questions and comments by emailing us at lockedonheat@gmail.com or using the hashtag AskLOHeat. And support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. At our Patreon page, you can find a running list of all of our favorite hypothetical trades and our salary cap breakdown for the next, I think, 4 years for the Heat. So some interesting stuff there. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.